Tulip Mania, Charles de la Cluse, Part 3. In other words, Carlos Colusius moves to Vienna. Now today, Vienna is a Central European city noted for its beauty and its culture. However, in the time of Carlos Colusius, it was very much a frontier town. Although it was the capital of the Holy Roman Empire and the home of the imperial court of the Habsburgs, it was also only 50 miles from the border of the Ottoman Empire, and it had two nicknames. The Ottomans called it the Golden Apple, which they believed was the key to invading Western Europe. The second one was what the Western Europeans referred to it as, the front line of Christianity against the Ottomans. Now, under Suleiman the Magnificent, his army of 250,000 Turks and allies failed to take the city in 1529. But the Ottomans would return and try again in the Great Siege of 1683, which, of course, Vienna was saved only by the intervention of the Polish army. Now, for all the elegance of the Habsburg imperial residence, which was the Schönbrunn, and the beauty of the broad sweep of the Danube River, and the bustle of the narrow, crowded streets in the center of the town, the state of the gates and the walls of Vienna mattered more than the addition of a few flower beds. Gardens were something of a luxury. From the moment Clusius arrived, he discovered that while there were advantages to working for an emperor, his job was attended by many frustrations. Obviously, Emperor Maximilian was very busy. Clusius had to wait 2 months after his arrival for an audience, and then more than a year for any sign of activity at the site chosen for the garden. Worse, the imperial chamberlain, who was in charge of both the finances of the hortus, or garden, and paying Clusius' salary, was a strict Catholic who made Clusius' life as difficult as he could for the Protestant botanist. On the other hand, Clusius did begin to receive regular packages of both bulbs and seeds of many plants from the imperial ambassador that was situated at Istanbul. And he was able to strike up a botanical friendship with Olgier Gislain de Besbecq, who was now back in court in Vienna. The two men exchanged presents, which of course were plants, and when Besbecq left for France in 1573, he presented his friend with a large quantity of seed. Colusius did not get the opportunity to plant the seeds for another 2 to 3 years, by which time Besbecq's gift had shriveled so badly that Colusius feared that the seeds were dead. But they did eventually germinate and turned into a spectacular profusion of tulips. For all of that, the garden project continued to languish. And by the summer of 1576, Colusius' pay was now 11 months behind. Then Emperor Maximilian died suddenly, and matters took a drastic turn for the worse. Rudolf II, the new Holy Roman Emperor, was a Catholic zealot who dismissed every Protestant at the court. Worse, he had little interest in flowers, and so the fledgling hortus was torn up so a riding school could be built on the site instead. Colusius was horrified. Although his services were always in demand, he never again worked for another monarch. Now, Colusius stayed for a while in Vienna. He was disillusioned, and worst of all, he was plagued by repeated thefts of rare plants from his private garden. At a time when much coveted plants might exist in only one or two gardens in Europe, the organized theft of specimens was, if not exactly commonplace, was certainly far from being unknown. Now, normally, the men who carried out these thefts were often knowledgeable connoisseurs, sometimes people that, you know, wanted them for themselves, but generally they worked for other nobles. They knew exactly what they were doing in their own right. There were thieves that weren't knowledgeable. They would steal the plants the old-fashioned way, simply bribing the poorly paid servants who acted as gardeners for the necessary information. Plant thieves generally worked for nobles and merchants who wanted an enviable garden for minimal effort. Worse, the thieves seldom made any effort to conceal the evidence of their activities. But the police weren't interested in investigating plant theft, and there certainly was no interest in prosecuting the well-connected nobles for such trivial offenses. So you were pretty much just out of luck. For Clusius, on at least one occasion, he was forced to hold his tongue while a Viennese noblewoman proudly conducted him around her flower beds that she had stocked with plants that were stolen from his garden. Carlos Clusius was by now a very old man, over 60 years of age, and worse, partially crippled. He had taken a very bad fall in his bath. In addition, he suffered undiagnosed stomach complaints and had lost all of his teeth. So with his imperial salary gone, he was now in financial trouble. He needed some way to supplement his meager income from his French lordship and the occasional food parcels that were sent to him by his friends. Clusius also yearned for some sort of academic recognition of his life's work. Well, that finally happened, and it happened in 1592. He is going to receive an offer, become a member of the medical facility, or faculty, I should say, at the University of Leiden. And this will be a big change for him and where he gets recognized. So we'll be looking at that in our next show. Now, the sources for this are Tulip Mania by Dash, Tulips in the Auto-Turkish Cultural Art Structure by Demoise, The Revolt in the Netherlands by Guile, The Book of the Tulip by Hall, The Tulip by Pavord, and Memoirs of Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds by McKay. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us by picking up a CD, which can also be had on a USB port, or donating to us. Thank you very much.